Hey, guys.
7:06.
I really can't even do you when I do the old you. I used to tell people that's the only you that I did.
Hold on, here we go.
Here's your chance to win tonight.
It's in between.
128. Dimes. 15.
W-N-A-M. It is 7:11 with Big Don on Thursday night. 82 degrees right now. Cloudy overnight, low 62. Tomorrow, cloudy and hot, chance of showers and thunderstorms. Wear something flimsy, girl.
Okay, anyway, there's one of my old DJ tapes.
That's the old days of radio.
I love radio.
Back
I love,
in the great old days.
I love radio. It's been the passion of my life. This guy, Mark Fisher, who I were talking about yesterday, Mike and I were talking about him. He's written a book called Something in the Air. It is a book about everything that is wrong with radio. Despite the fact that our show's mentioned in it, and Mark was nice enough to talk to me and feature some of what I had, some of my pablum in the book, let's get him on now and talk about this. Mark.
Hi, the guys.
Hey, dude, how are you? Good to talk to you.
How you doing, Mark?
Great, thanks for having me.
Little did I know when we sat down a couple of years ago and you said you wanted to write a book about radio. We had lunch one day, and I just screamed for about 2 hours about everything that was wrong with radio. You actually took notes, and you talked to a bunch of other radio people who came to pretty much the same assumption that radio sucks, and that is pretty much the gist of your book, right?
Well, it's that it's in a really rough spot right now. I mean, you know, radio has been so intimate, so personal, so much a part of Americans' lives, and it's been at the leading edge of the pop culture through the whole period from the 50s all the way up into the early 80s. But in the last decade, it's just been going in the wrong direction.
Now, we were reading some of the music testing that you had yesterday.
The researching.
Yeah, right. with the guy from Oldies 100. When you got inside and you got to say, we read that part on the air yesterday with people eating brownies and listening to seven seconds of a song being played. I know you wrote it in the book, but just on a human level, how freaking ridiculous is that, in your opinion, as a way to find music that people like hearing on a radio?
It's just bizarre. And the people who are sitting there being paid $50 to sit there and listen to 400 6-second cuts from songs, they thought it was pretty freaky, too. I mean, they're sitting there, they're all wired up like they're having their blood taken or something. And they're listening to these tiny snippets of songs. And, you know, on one hand, it's kind of amazing that you can recognize all those songs just based on 3 seconds. You can. And, you know, it's amazing that all that stuff is stored in your brain and you can just recall it at will. But on the other hand, it's so demeaning and dehumanizing, and it just takes it sucks the life out of it. What's supposed to be an art and what's supposed to be just sort of hardwired to your emotions.
And it's a shortcut. And I think that's what I always thought of research as, a shortcut. And is there any time in the history of radio, modern history, that you saw this going in this direction? Is there anything that was key to this, or did it just evolve and get worse and worse and worse?
Well, what happened is, and this has happened again and again from the 50s all the way up to now, every time you get a period of big creativity and original programming, the corporations come in and co-opt it, because that's the way America works. I mean, and that's what's great about America, is corporations figure out how to make big money off some guy's completely out there idea. But what happened here is it's like hardening of the arteries. It's mm-hmm. The research, because we had the tools, and because satellite came along, and because the computers enabled people to really massage the statistics, it became possible to create a radio station that existed entirely in a machine and that was basically created by a machine. And the problem with that is it really, you know, it might have worked there for a few years before computers came along, before iPods came along, but now it makes no sense, because you and I can download the radio station of our choice.
Bingo.
And the only thing radio has left to offer is personality and intelligence.
And they've cut that right out of radio.
Exactly.
Mark, I got a million questions. What kind of response have you gotten from diehard radio guys who are knee-deep in this research crap you're talking about? Have you gotten any negative feedback from radio guys, or are they just giving you the pablum like, you're writing about the way that it should be, I wish we could do it like that, but nobody really has the balls to do it?
No, it's actually more depressing than that. What I'm getting from them is, I can't talk to you on the record but thank God you wrote this because we agree entirely, and yet we're doing all this stuff because we have to. Now, of course, that's, you know, that's totally hokum because they don't have to do it. They're just doing it because that's what the suits want. Now, you know, it would take some courage for somebody to stand up and say, you know what, I'm going to jettison all these formats. I'm just going to go out there and do Top 40 the way it used to be done because people now have much more eclectic tastes than they used to. And we're back in a time when people are willing to listen to lots of different kinds of music. If somebody had the courage to do that, I think it would be a big success. I know, Don, you think it would be a big success too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that would take a lot more courage than people in the companies like Clear Channel and so on have right now, because they're under tremendous pressure and everybody fears for their jobs.
It seems to me that it's almost an excuse that is used. And
right.
It's an excuse when it comes to radio, when it comes to personalities, when it comes to development of musical artists. Having all this research and all this computerized testing that they do almost serves as an excuse not to let talent flourish.
Bingo.
Right. And it also, the evil secret about research is it all looks backwards. So you're almost precluded from doing anything new because the research just tells you what people used to like and, you know, what's their favorite song. Well, your favorite song isn't something you haven't heard yet. Your favorite song is something that probably you heard when you were, you know, 19 or 21. And as long as the research keys to that, you're just going to hear. That's why you have this predictability, the sameness on one station after another.
Mark, I know the book is selling well. What type of response are you getting from non-radio people, from someone who just might look at Amazon and say, hey, here's a book about how screwed up radio is? What are you hearing from those people?
Well, I think what a lot of those people are getting into is the connections between radio and what happened in the country. Because the book takes us from when TV came along, and it looked like radio was dead, which is a lot like today, where newspapers, radio, TV are all kind of in the same boat, losing a lot of time that people are spending online. And so a lot of the book is about how old media survive and adapt when new technologies come along. And the answer is, it's all about the talent. It's all about the creativity.
Right.
And localism is a big part of it too. You know, a station ought to feel like the place that it serves. And that's another thing that has been kind of lost lately.
Okay, when you get back to the guys that you talk to in this book, and I'm going to use myself as an example, I'm passionate about radio, and when I read the book, I read a lot of guys, even these guys that are working in these crap situations where they're dealing with research they don't believe in and philosophies they don't believe in, they're still passionate about radio. In your opinion, as a guy who's researched this, an outside guy, if you've got people on the inside who still care about it and want to do it the right way, but you've got suits who are stepping on them, how does the creativity ever get through from someone who's researched it from the outside and is objective, not subjective, as I would be?
Well, I draw the lesson from what happened in history. Go back to 1950. All of a sudden, all the talent walks out the door from radio and goes over to TV, whether it's Milton Berle, Lucille Ball, the sitcoms, the soap operas, all gone. And so the innovation didn't come from the big companies, didn't come from the radio networks. It came from little places. It came from one guy out in Omaha who came up with the idea of Top 40 radio. It came from one guy in L.A. who dared to play race music, black songs on a white station. And it's not going to come from the big corporations. It's going to come from people who are in small situations who are saying, you know, we're in this new environment. We got all these new technologies. Here's something that radio can do that no one else can because there's something about the intimacy of it. So here's a really talented talk host, a really talented DJ, and we're going to let them spell out their whole intelligence and bare their soul on the radio.
But does it get to it? And I don't want to be too pessimistic here because I really do believe in new ideas.
It is nothing but a pessimistic situation.
But isn't it similar to, it mirrors society as well, the mauling of America, the sameness of America, where everywhere you go, you get the Home Depots, you get the Walmarts. It's the same type of thing in radio. Is it easier now than it it's more difficult now, isn't it, for anybody to flourish with a new idea because we're mauling our country?
That's exactly. It's much harder because there are all these huge institutions, whether it's a Clear Channel or Walmart. But the fact is that in a lot of those dead downtowns that Walmart created, where all the main street stores died because everyone went to the Walmart, if you go back to them, some of them are still boarded up, but a lot of them have some interesting, creative little shops that people, you know, somebody's an empty nester, somebody retires, and they have a dream. They wanted to do, you know, a great butcher shop or an interesting craft store or
a
cool restaurant. That's where innovation comes from. People still have ideas. People still want to get themselves heard. And, you know, radio, another dark secret of radio is that you can really do it on the cheap. It's not like TV or movies where you need thousands of people and millions of dollars. For very little money, you can get on the radio in a lot of places in this country, and there are still places where radio stations go for very little money. That's where the innovation has to come from. It's not going to come from a big city radio station.
I never thought I would say this speaking to a print guy. He's got it right. He should be hired to run a radio station, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, it's really true, and it's something that we've lived in, you know, you've lived
forever.
In it for almost 30 years. I've been in it for 25 years. It's amazing. It really is.
Well, Mark, it's great having you on. It's a great book. Everybody go to Amazon, buy this book, Something in the Air by Mark Fisher, because radio just sucks, and he writes exactly why it sucks so bad. It was great having you on, Mark.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, dude.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Oh, Mark Fisher's book, Something in the Air. He'll be signing copies Sunday, Feb 4. Super Bowl Sunday?
Well, yeah, before the game.
That's a good booking.
Everybody
will be there at 4 o'clock.
Well, he is a print guy.
Only 2 hours before the game. At the Barnes & Noble in Classic Rockville. You know, someone should hip him to that.
Yeah.
The fact that the game is on at the same time.
What time is the signing?
4 and the game's at 6.
Mm. You can make it.
On Super Bowl Sunday?
Not good, Don. Not a good idea, Rob.
Maybe they'll have a portable at the bookstore.
TV, yeah. A portable with rabbit ears.
What does he say about us in here?
Are we in there?
What does he say about you?
You're in there. I know that. Am I in there?
Yeah, your name's in here, sure.
Oh, goody.
With our show?
Yes.
Blah, 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 blah. There's no greater. You've heard me say this so many times. There's no greater feeling in the world than being at a radio station alone. All this stuff is going out to people. You're by yourself, says Don Gerotimo, who syndicated Don and Mike's show with Mike O'Mara. He's a bunch of guys hanging around doing stunts, cracking jokes, and telling stories.
Right.
Gerotimo was so fascinated by radio as a boy in Rockville, Maryland, he kept charts documenting how many minutes elapsed between snips of hit records on his favorite radio station. First time I was on in WLS in Chicago, my dream come true, I put on Stairway to Heaven and walked around the building and said, I made it, I'm here, I'm inside.
Yeah.
This is my board, this is my cart machines, my jingles. Radio is the lowest level of show business, but it's the only one where it's just you making a crack in a dark room, and somewhere out there, there's 100 guys saying, that's what I want to say to my wife.
Right.
Despite the success of the Don and Mike show, Don knows the medium he loves has hit a brick wall. Much of the emotional bond between station and listener has been lost. And then he goes on and on. It says, although the Don and Mike show traffics in talk, its packaging and spirit are defined by its top 40 roots.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes on and says that I will play top 40 records, blah, 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 blah. Gerotimo, like an uncanny number of big name radio successes. Hey, thank you. Has a dream that he will give up his gig, buy a small station at the shore and play top 40. That's true. I did say that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there you go.
That's great. Can I see that for a second?
Oh, there you go.
Very cool.
There you go.
All right. Let me just open this one thing. Yeah, that's the section I wanted to read. Can I just give you two sentences of this?
Sure.
He gently touched his shoulder.
Oh, no.
Slowly his pants fell to the floor.
What's that about me with Harv Moore?
Now we're selling books.
Hey, Donnie.
I was just doing the old book gag.
How you doing, Donnie? No,
sweat rolled down his belly as the temperature rose in the room.
It is a really, really good read, and not because Mike and I are mentioned on a couple of pages, but this guy talks to radio people. And what is it about radio? It's like the same thing we were talking about. We talked about Bush, you know. You voted for him, stand up and be accountable for it. If you're one of the people working in one of these radio stations and you're talking to a guy and you say to him, you're absolutely right, but for God's sakes, Don't tell anybody I said it.
Oh, sure. Well, you said it's, as Mark Fisher said, it's worse when he talks to these people.
Be accountable. Be accountable for who you voted for. Be accountable for the fact that radio sucks now.
The deadening of radio can be, it's not the SPs, like Bill O'Reilly says, the secular progressives. It's the SGs. Smarmy guys.
Yeah.
Because it's when the smarmy guys started coming in that radio went down the crapper.
Always.
Yep. You're going to like this part too, Mike. Hold on. Let me see. What is this? But those who confuse political loyalty with showbiz acumen were relegated to the fringes of talk radio. Those who have made the big time have been, for the most part, refugees from Top 40. Like any successful talker, you will find an ex-DJ like Rush Limbaugh, who has changed his quick-ton manner of dispensing shreds of meaning, switching from music to talk while still serving as twin masters. Content is secondary. Mm-hmm. Tom Likas, Don Imus, Howard Stern, Don and Mike, Tom Joyner, all were jocks who made their living spinning the hits. They run talk shows deeply inspired by Top 40 formulas,
right,
and many of them have the Democratic slant on their shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. He's very mm-hmm. smart.
He is.
He knows.
Who is that?
Let me
the
see.
The Democratic slant. Anyway,
there you go. That's that. That's
very
Mark.
Cool.
That's
sounds
Mark.
Like an interesting read.
Pretty good book.
He says mm-hmm. there's hope. Mm-hmm.
I'd let you borrow it, but the pages where my name is are all sticky.
Oh, no.
That's the closest I will ever get to being like in a real book.
That's part of the fun. No, you're in mine.
And you'll be in mine.
That's when we get done doing this little thing, and it'll be the race to publish.
I'm calling Kitty Kelly first.
I'm very excited about the potential.
I remember when Mike was at the... God, what was that joint where you got up on the tables that night?
Which name them.
No. What was the one? No. It was a one night when you really were really.
The National Cathedral.
No. Who were those guys? Those guys that Mike used to know.
Tiny Tim.
The Greek guys?
The Greek guys.
Yeah.
Oh, the Shark Club.
There you go.
The Shark Club. Still know those guys. My friend John T.
Do you remember the night of the Shark Club?
I certainly do.
That is maybe the greatest, most out of control you ever were.
Yeah.
You were dancing on top of a pool table.
I remember that. And do you remember we were drinking shots? Were you with us when we were drinking shots and smashing them against the wall?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good times. Sunnier days.
Good times.
Lots of fun.
I got a break. Oh, we were talking about, what's his name? The president,
That guy.
W.
I think history is going to look back and see a lot of ways we could have done things better. No question about it.
We certainly have talked a lot about him today.
We have.
We'll go to the horse's mouth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you can follow along, we come right back.
This is the Don and Mike Show.